Presenting Huff Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves.
CX-4 calling control tower. CX-4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Control tower back to CX-4. Wind southeast. Ceiling 1200. All clear.
Okay. This is Huff Harrigan coming in.
Yes, it's America's ace of the airwaves. Coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Huff Harrigan.
You know, gang, this matter of testing all kinds of military equipment is important from the standpoint of developing new weapons. In testing equipment, one of the most vital conditions is the weather. Natural weather is not very reliable for testing purposes. For example, Ladd Field in Alaska has long been used to test Air Force equipment in the Arctic region. But no area in Alaska can provide the right combination of frigid weather conditions every time it's required. And waiting for ideal weather wastes valuable time and man hours. Well, the obvious solution to the problem of finding the right weather for proving ground activities is, of course, man-made weather. And that's exactly what they have at Eglin Field, Florida, headquarters of the Air Proving Ground Command. The new climate hangar there, largest of its kind in the world, can produce snow, fog, rain, high and low humidities, and a temperature range from minus 70 degrees to 165 degrees above. It makes possible year-round testing under the best of conditions. Instead of taking equipment to be tested to the weather, the Air Force has brought the weather to the equipment. The hangar was planned and the building of it started during the war. Now it's large enough to permit five B-25s to be tested at the same time over a range of weather from very cold to very hot. Windstorms with speeds up to 100 miles an hour can be produced, along with sleet, snow, rain, dust, or sand. In short, any kind of weather can be made to order at Eglin Field. I'll be back to tell you more about this climate hangar, so don't forget to listen. And now to our story. Flying north to Ohio, then west to Nebraska, Hoff, Tank, and John Temple of the FBI followed a trail of suddenly discordant bells. Bells which had been sent from the Carillon of Peronitz to various towns in the United States, and which, for some mystifying reason, had lost their perfect tone. The trail ended in Nebraska, where the last bell rang out off-key just as the boys arrived, and where an FBI agent who had been guarding the bell was found dead. Now, Hop, Tank, and Temple have returned to Lakeville. We find them in the airport office, relating their adventures of the past 24 hours to Gail Nolan.
There wasn't anything more we could do in Bay City, so we started back.
And that's where we got our first break, Gail.
What do you mean?
We found out who put the whammy on the bells and who killed John's friend.
No, wait a minute, Tank.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say. We ain't sure. We ain't got no proof. Well, doggone it, I'm sure.
You're sure about what, Tank?
I'll explain, Gail. You see, when I checked out at the Bay City Field, I saw a name on the airport register that I'd noticed on the register at the Flemington Field.
And he was flying the same plane, too.
John immediately wired Washington. They checked the airports near all the other towns where the bells had been damaged.
And they came up with the same guy. He even used the same excuse about engine trouble.
Say, who's telling this, you or I?
Oh, that's the reason.
The reason for what, Miss Nolan?
FBI headquarters called Aunt Agatha late last night and got her all excited. Chris had sense enough to give them my number for information about the airport, and they called me.
To ask you about Carlos Mendez?
Mm-hmm. It's awfully hard to believe he's behind it all. He seems very nice.
Nice, huh? He's a killer.
Then, Miss Nolan, what did he do while he was here?
Well, he landed late in the afternoon, checked in, and said he had engine trouble. Then a little later, he said he had to have a bar or something welded and had to go into town. And Agatha and Chris drove him in, as a matter of fact.
Oh, my gosh, how close can you get?
Did his mechanic go in with him?
I think so, but Chris will know for sure.
And then?
Well, he came back about 9 o'clock, repaired the plane, and took off.
We landed at 9:15.
Yes, and almost crashed into them. I get goose pimples whenever I think of it.
Of course, the engine trouble was obviously just an excuse. Do you remember what Mendes looked like, Miss Nolan? Can you describe him?
He was rather tall, dark complexion, spoke softly, no accent, but you could tell he wasn't American.
And his mechanic?
I didn't see him.
Well, Mendes' description is enough. I'll send it down to Washington right away.
I'm afraid I haven't told you very much.
It's enough, especially since we know he flies a Blanca monoplane and we have his registration numbers.
Once your men find the plane, it'll be easy enough to catch up with him.
Mind if I use your phone, Hop?
Oh, of course not.
Hop, Do you think you'll be able to catch Mendez?
Hello?
With the FBI on it?
I'd like to put
I don't see how we can miss.
But John said you didn't have any proof.
We don't.
Proof. I still say let me lay my hands on the guy and I'll pound it on him.
This is John Temple.
Tank, you heard what John said. The FBI doesn't operate that way. In this country, a man is innocent until he's proved guilty.
That's doing it the hard way.
Yeah, but it's the only way.
But why, Hop? Why should he go around the country drilling holes in bells and then fill them with metal plugs?
We've asked ourselves that until we're blue in the face, Gale. There's no logical explanation.
Huh? Tank, they found it.
Who?
Mendez?
Where?
I should say they found his plane. It's at New City Airport.
New City?
But it's less than 200 miles away.
Are they sure, John?
Positive. A Blanca monoplane. And the registration checks.
Well, what's it doing there?
Who cares? What are we waiting for? Come on.
Moving simultaneously, Hop, Tank, and John Temple reach for the coats, and a moment later are charging across the hangar apron to the Beechcraft. As Tank revs the engine in a quick warm-up, Hop turns back to Gale.
Sorry to leave you flat like this, but we're getting hot now.
It's all right, Hop.
We may be back by this afternoon if things work out. In any case, tell Aunt Agatha to have a good dinner for us, or Tank will be on the warpath.
I will.
Hop, we're ready.
Right. See you later, Gale.
Hop, call me. It's fine, Mendez.
Sure thing. So long.
Jumping into the cabin, Hop quickly fastens his safety belt and, with a final wave to Gale, sends the Beechcraft roaring down the runway in a fast takeoff. Gale remains on the apron until the beach is airborne, then turns and walks back to the small airport office, where she sits down and concentrates on a mass of paperwork on the desk. She is completely unaware of another plane landing on the field until the engines roar loudly on the apron and finally cut. Hurrying to the window, she sees a Fairchild Packet, a large freight plane parked in front of the hangar. Two men climb out, and one walks briskly toward the office. For a few seconds, Gale stares without recognizing him. Then, as she does, she utters a muffled gasp and reaches for the phone. But the door swings open, and a soft voice utters a command.
Put down that phone, Miss Nolan.
Senor Mendez.
Yes, Senor Mendez. Put down the phone. That is much better.
What can I do for you, Senor?
That depends, Miss Nolan.
I didn't expect you back so soon.
So soon? I'm surprised you expected me back at all.
Well, I...
Whom were you about to call?
Call?
Yes, over the telephone.
Oh, my father.
So, and you wish to speak with him about what?
Dinner. I wanted to tell him I wasn't coming home for dinner. If you'll excuse me,
Put down that phone.
But my father is waiting for me to call.
Then he will continue to wait. Put down the phone.
Your attitude is rather strange, Senor.
Perhaps. Where are Mr. Harrigan and Mr. Tinker?
Why, they just went up on a short test flight. They'll be back soon.
So, you are sure they did not go to New City?
New City? Why, no. Why should they go there?
To see a certain airplane, perhaps.
What's that?
It would seem that Vogel has finally managed to break the lock to your hangar doors.
Well, why should he want...
We wish to keep our airplane out of sight, Miss Nolan. It will be more convenient.
Now, see here, I don't know what you're up to, Senor Mendez, but you're going too far.
I will go much farther. Miss Nolan, let us stop this sparring. You know very well why I am here. And I know that you know.
But I...
You also must know what happened in Bay City. Therefore, let that be a warning to you. I will tolerate no interference.
What are you going to do?
Complete unfinished business, Miss Nolan. And for that, I find it necessary to use this airport. And so for the next few hours, you will place yourself and this field at my disposal.
His dark eyes burning, Carlos Mendez calmly announces his intentions. Yet Gale senses cold brutality behind the silky voice. One false step, and he will not hesitate to kill her. Gang, there's a startling surprise ahead, so stand by. Now, gang, let's get back to that all-weather hangar the Air Force has down in Eglin Field, Florida. The first large-scale cold test in the new building was made last spring. A Fairchild Packet, a B-29, a P-54, a P-47, a Sikorsky helicopter, trucks, tanks, clothing, and many miscellaneous items were wheeled into the main test room. The temperature was lowered to a marrow-chilling minus 70 degrees. That was the first attempt to manufacture Arctic weather on such a large scale, and it turned out very successfully. This idea of a climate hangar really isn't brand new. However, all the earlier ones weren't large enough and didn't have enough equipment for actual tests. They were limited to static tests. The material to be tested was placed in the room and left for a certain period under hot or cold weather conditions. But the mammoth hangar at Eglin was designed to permit engines and other moving parts to be in operation during tests. The main hangar has a clear working space almost as big as a football gridiron. The two doors weigh 200 tons apiece, each operating on a pair of rails. In one corner, there's the all-weather room, where temperatures can go from 170 above to 70 below. Dust storms, rain, and snow can be whipped up in the all-weather room, and items under test can be watched through heavy windows. Then there's the altitude chamber. It's like many other compression chambers, but it can do more and do it quicker. In only 12 minutes, the temperature there can be driven down to minus 70 from a point above freezing. Conditions of any altitude up to 100,000 feet can be produced in the chamber to check the effects of extreme height on planes. Now, before I leave you, gang, here's a reminder that your country needs men and women for the planes of tomorrow. So always remember, America needs flyers. And now back to our story. Several hours have passed. Hop, Tank, and John Temple are roaring southward through a late afternoon sky on their way back to Lakeville after their quick jump to New City.
Boy, what a waste of time. The whole afternoon down the drain. Might just as well have stayed home.
That was Mendez's plane, Tank. There's no getting away from that.
Sure, and the plane's going to tell us a lot, I suppose. Where was Mendez?
Well, we know he's in the general area somewhere.
That's a big help.
You told Inspector Wilson to keep a close watch over the ship, didn't you, John?
Yes, of course I.
Mendez paid tie-down fees for a week in advance. He ain't coming back in a hurry.
Maybe a blind, Hank.
All right, then. What's he doing in New City? There ain't no more bells for him to play around with.
That's what I was thinking.
Good Lord, I wonder.
What?
The Lakeville bell.
What about it?
New City's only 200 miles from Lakeville.
So what? He already fixed our bell.
Are you sure?
Of course, we saw the hole ourselves.
Yes, but the Lakeville bell was the only one that didn't have a metal plug in it.
What difference does that make?
I don't know. But I've got a strange feeling. Hop, open that throttle wide. Let's get back to Lakeville fast. Please, Hop, keep your foot on that gas pedal.
Easy, John. There's a speed limit in this town, you know.
Anyway, this Jeep ain't got wings.
I've got a hunch, and I want to see that bell again.
Look, you got to promise me something, both of you.
What?
As soon as we see the bell, we're going back to Aunt Agatha's, and we're going to sit down to a big feed. I swear, I ain't had a decent meal in a week.
Okay.
I want to stop off at Gail's house, too. I promised to tell her what happened in New City.
How come she wasn't at the field when we came in?
Guess she had to leave. And there's the town hall, John. Another 2 minutes, you can check that bell to your heart's content.
Oh. Can I?
Sure, if old man Miller raises a fuss, I'll slap him down.
I'm not talking about Miller, Tank. Look up at that steeple.
Great jumping, Jeffers. Bell is gone.
Momentarily forgetting that he is driving, Hop stares open-mouthed at the steeple of Town Hall not two blocks away. Tank is right. The belfry is empty. Gang, you won't want to miss our next episode, full of action and suspense. So tune in and fly with Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves. So long, Hop. We'll be seeing you same time, same mutual station. Hop Harrigan is a transcribed, copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazine and is brought to you Monday through Friday, same time, same mutual station.